right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by the Falcoholics, Kevin Knight. We're going to be talking about some of the recent rumors and moves by the Falcons in free agency, as well as giving you our thoughts on this past week's combine, some guys that stood out, maybe some guys that did not, and much, much more.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest running Falcon fan sites on the internet, and the host of this podcast. I am joined by Kevin Knight, who writes for The Falcoholic, which is also one of the longest running Falcon websites on the internet. Kevin wasn't there from the start, but he's been there for a good little bit, and providing draft takes and much, much more. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Aaron. For a second, I thought that was like a low-key shot at the Falcoholic, but you recovered nicely. So
yeah, no. I got to take my shots when I get the opportunity to.
Of course, yeah.
That's how I roll. Because the blogging dirty war did not turn out as well as I had hoped it would, I have to sort of pick up the shield, as it were, and slog into the fight, I guess, to take down the Falcoholic any way I can.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, we seem to steal all the blogging dirty people eventually at the Falcoholic. So we just hired another one of their guys, Adnan Ikic. If you guys don't follow him on Twitter, he's cool. But we've kind of sapped their numbers. So, yeah, just time to fully focus on the Falcoholic again.
Yeah. All right, man, let's talk about the Falcons' recent moves. They cut two guys over the weekend in Derek Shelby and Levine Toyo. They also re-signed, came to an accord with Matt Bryant, the kicker, the one guy that I have been saying was the main priority. If any of these free agents, you look at their list of impending free agents, if there was one player that the Falcons have to re-sign, it was Matt Bryant, and they did that. So I can, for one time on this podcast, praise the Falcons in that regard. But with these moves, Kevin, what were your thoughts seeing some of these cuts as well as the re-signing of Bryant?
Well, with Toilolo, it was a little shocking, I guess, just because of the proximity to when they gave him that contract just last year, really. So that's a little strange to do that. I mean, I think we all pretty much agreed that they were definitely overpaying for his services. You know, we should have kept Patrick DeMarco. Just going to throw that out there. I'm sure,
you know,
I'm sure everyone agrees.
You know what the mantra of this podcast is. So, yeah, you're in safe hands here.
Exactly. Stuff,
things like that.
Yeah, but Toilolo's not terrible. It's just he was getting overpaid, and he doesn't really offer anything as a receiver. So it's not surprising. They didn't save a ton of cap, but when you're as tight to the cap as the Falcons are going to be this offseason, particularly now that we've heard that the cap number is going to be around 177 instead of what I think a lot of people were projecting, closer to 180. So that makes it even tighter. It makes sense. He's not a key contributor, and probably irons tight end as a need that they'll either fill in free agency or the draft. And you know, that Hayden Hurst has been generating some buzz. I know everyone loves Trey Burton, but we'll see what happens there. But Derek Shelby, basically, to me, it came down to they were going to part ways with either Brooks Reed or Derek Shelby. And depending on how the draft goes, they might elect to part with Brooks Reed later too. I mean, I don't know if that's wise necessarily, but you know, Brooks Reed's kind of that jack of all trades edge. And I think that his value's maybe a little bit higher because of what he offers as a pass rusher. He's decent there. And then he's also a pretty decent run defender. So he can offer you maybe a little more versatility. Whereas Derek Shelby, might have been the best run defender on the team. I mean, he was definitely our best run defending edge, but kind of a one-trick pony, and that's disappointing considering what the Falcons brought him in to do, kind of play inside outside. He was basically relegated to that edge role as a base package edge. And he was a good run defender there, but you know, for $5.87 million or whatever he was making, that's just too much money. Obviously Matt Bryant, great signing. He's money. You know, with his age at this point, it kind of begs the question, like, when is this fantasy going to end? But for all we know, it might he might be able to kick at a high level for like 7 more years. I mean, he's ageless. So kudos to the Falcons for locking him up. And it seems like it was relatively reasonable, the deal, especially compared to looking at what Graham Gano got, which was a bigger deal. So I think the Falcons are in good shape with Bryant kicking, and I hope he lasts forever, let's be honest. I mean, maybe by the time he's considering retirement, we can get some bionic legs invented, and then he can just kick forever.
Yeah, you know, eventually the wheels are going to fall off, but my whole thing is I'll worry about that when it happens. We'll just enjoy the ride until then, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? You're right. It could be like 7 years from now, given how well he's been kicking the last couple of years. I think only because we went through that whole thing with Jason Elam, we kind of expect it to happen eventually, but I think maybe, you know, considering that Elam, you know, drop off was so stark, that maybe that is not the norm, and maybe Matt Bryant should be able to coast for several years. You know, Phil Dawson's still kicking, Adam Vinatieri's still kicking, so we might be in an era where you can realistically expect kickers to last until age 45, if need be. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully we never have to look for another kicker again. Although it seems like every kicker the Falcons bring in as an undrafted guy ends up starting for some team eventually. I think it's like the last 3 seasons, every guy they've brought in has ended up like playing for somebody else. So they seem to be pretty good at finding undrafted kickers. Maybe that's some consolation.
Yeah, definitely. And it was interesting. I didn't mention this the other day when I was talking about the cuts on this podcast, but when you talked about Derek Shelby's cap number, it just brought back into my mind sort of like one of the reasons why I was surprised that the Falcons cut these guys given their cap high. You know, when you look at the cap hits in a vacuum, you would be like, yeah, of course these guys need to go, Brooks Reed or Derek Shelby, they're getting paid way too much. But then I just think back to 2 years ago where Tyson Jackson was, you know, counting like $6 million against the cap, and they kept him on the roster, and we were all baffled by that. And so just, oh, like they just, you know, $5 million is, you know, close to $6 million is perfectly fine in their eyes for, you know, a role-playing defensive lineman. At least it was with Tyson Jackson. So why wouldn't it be for Derek Shelby or Brooks Reed, both of whom were probably, you would probably agree, contributed a lot more to the Falcons defensive line than Jackson did in some of those years. So that was sort of one of the reasons why it was a little bit of surprising, but you know, I'm not going to fault the Falcons if they, you know, learn from the mistake of maybe keeping Tyson Jackson a year or two longer than they probably should have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can all agree that Tyson Jackson was getting way overpaid and didn't really offer anything. Derek Shelby at least was a I would say like a high level run defender at edge, and Brooks Reed offers you pretty solid play as like a number three edge. I mean, he's nothing spectacular there, but he plays hard and he can stop the run and pass rush a little. And he's really worked on that spin move. I got to give him props for that. And the hair alone is worth at least $1 million. So, yeah, I'm not too upset if they decide to keep him around. You know, you need those veteran guys to kind of round out the bottom of your roster. But back a couple of years ago, we were looking at the roster like, who are the Falcons going to pay? We just need to get some good players in here. And it seems like at this point that they've amassed enough young players that they need to pay, that they're going to be forced to move on from these overpaid veterans. They don't get the luxury of keeping Tyson Jackson around too long. So,
yeah. It's, you know, you mentioned that maybe Brooks Reed will get cut after the draft. I do think, you know, he's sort of going to have to look over his shoulder between now and the beginning of the regular season. Because you're right, if they do sort of make some additional moves this offseason, and we're about to talk about one of those, you know, it could potentially prompt, you know, the team to be like, you know what, now you're not worth the $5+ million or whatever that you're going to count, and we can get comparable value out of your replacement for, you know, 10% the price or 20% the price or whatever it is. So, and that move we're talking about is the possibility, the rumored, that the Falcons are talking to the Seattle Seahawks about a trade for Michael Bennett. And I do want to get Kevin's thoughts on that. But I want to remind you guys that if you're gearing up for free agency, then host Matt Williamson of the Locked On NFL podcast is doing his positional top 10 countdown of the top free agents at each position group. Go check that out to get geared up for this upcoming free agent period that starts in just a little more than a week. So, Kevin, the floor is yours. What are your thoughts on the Michael Bennett trade rumors?
Please, please make this happen, football gods. Look, I know people have issues somehow with Michael Bennett. And, you know, look, if you got issues with Michael Bennett, that's your own thing. I'm not going to discuss anything with you on that. Like, politically, if you've got issues with him, fine. Like, nothing I say is going to change your mind on that count. But I don't know where this whole narrative that he's a locker room cancer came from. I mean, I know he's like fiery and, you know, he's done some less than stellar things on the field, especially even to Falcons players. Yeah. Jake Matthews, you know, Jake Matthews and Ryan Trigger probably have some words that they'll want to exchange. But look, Michael Bennett's a great player. He's 32, so he's getting up there, but he had a great season last year. I mean, 8.5 sacks. He's a good run defender too. He's basically a better version of Adrian Claiborne. He can replace that role. He can play inside. He can play outside. And Quinn loves him. I mean, to me, if Quinn signs off on it and Quinn's actively going and trying to get Michael Bennett, that's good enough for me. I mean, I trust Quinn on that. If Quinn thinks that Michael Bennett is not a locker room cancer, and in fact, is the perfect fit for his defense, because, you know, I think that Bennett had some of his best years statistically when Quinn was the coordinator in Seattle. So I just am not concerned at all about that. I would love to get Michael Bennett in here. I think it makes a lot of sense for the Falcons, who are very young on defense. And I think they need to continue having some veteran players in there. You know, Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley are kind of getting to that point where they're starting to maybe be able to kind of meld into the leaders that the team needs on the defensive line. I think Ricardo Allen is going to be that player for the secondary. But getting a veteran in there like Michael Bennett, who I think I like his personality. I mean, I don't necessarily like some of the quote unquote dirty plays, but look, I know a lot of you, I see a lot of people, a lot of you guys on Twitter calling the Falcons the Dirty Birds. Okay. You don't want, if you think Michael Bennett's too dirty for the Dirty Birds, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you know what that means, right? Like, you know how they got that nickname. So I would love it. It would be awesome. If they can do it for a fourth, I'm in. I wouldn't pay anything higher than that, because you still got to pick up his contract. And, you know, potentially there might be some kind of negotiations that go on with that. But for a fourth round pick, I'm confident to pull the trigger on that deal.
Yeah. Yeah. We discussed this the other day where it was like, yeah, for a fourth round pick, because of the team's success as of late, getting solid role players and in a couple of cases like Campbell and Devontae Freeman, some solid starters, you know, that is a valuable pick to this team, particularly now that they don't have a fifth round pick. And, you know, if your last pick in the draft is at the end of the third round and you don't pick again until the end of the sixth round, you know, you're going to be missing out on a lot of quality players in the draft. So that is something valuable to give up, but it's not necessarily so valuable where it's just like, you know, that's a slam dunk starter like you would typically envision for a first or second or even third round pick, where you can still get some high level players for that. So I'm with you there on the compensation. It'll be interesting to see whether that's the case. There's been reports that the Seahawks are seeking a second or third round pick, which makes sense from their end because they don't have a second or third round pick. And, you know, if I was putting on my Seahawks GM cap, which I often like to do in my spare time, on weekends and whatnot, but I would definitely be looking to try to get at least a third round pick for that. Otherwise, I sort of think even if Michael Bennett only plays one more year for you as, you know, your best pass rusher with the injuries to Cliff Avril, with Sheldon Richardson being a free agent, with who knows what's happening with Malik McDowell, you know, basically if you get rid of Michael Bennett at that point, you may be stuck with Frank Clark being the only decent pass rusher on your team. Plus your secondary is getting up in age and not as strong. Your linebackers are getting. So it would seem like if you want to try to keep the band together for one more postseason run, Bennett is worth, you know, more to you as a team than a fourth round pick. But who knows? Maybe, you know, they fired a bunch of coaches this year and maybe they really are sort of in a little bit more of a rebuild, retooling mode. But, you know, to all those people out there that have an issue with Michael Bennett, I'm sort of the same way. Like, if you have an issue with his on-field antics, I can't fault you for that. Like, he's done some messed up stuff over the time. I don't personally have an issue with that. I don't ultimately care too much about what players do on the field. Like, it's a game. It's entertainment to me. So it's like, you know, it's a little bit extra entertainment, I guess, when you're out there doing some of the extra stuff that he's out there doing, in my eyes. But like, the way I sort of see it, and I'll try to be as brief as possible as I can, which is impossible for me, but I see it as like, you kind of have to be a little bit on board with this move, even if you don't like the player himself. Just if when you take a step back and look at the big picture. And what I mean by that is, when you look at this Falcons team, and you may have a different opinion of Steve Sarkisian and his offense than I do, but like, the way I look at it, my biggest knock on Sark isn't that he's this horrible offensive coordinator or anything. I just think with the offense as we saw it in 2017, there's a ceiling for that offense. And I think it's, you know, the thing I said many, many times is it reminds me a lot of the Cutter offense and the Malarkey offense. And I think the ceiling for that offense in a nutshell is kind of like the second round of the playoffs. And like it was for those teams. And the only real way that you can go further than that is if, you know, you have a guy like Julio Jones, you know, putting the team on his back and carrying you through the playoffs, which he kind of did in 2012. And it looked like he was going to try to do it this past year as well. And I think with that being the case, the only real way that you can really get over the hump is either relying on Julio, which I don't think is a good option because, you know, he's always beat up by the end of the season. Like, he's just always going to be worn down just because of all the stuff that we ask him to do in this offense. So that's just not really a viable option for you to rely on that. And so you're just really relying on your defense to basically be that great defense that can sort of allow you to have a middling or above average offense and still go far. You know, you got to be a great defense to win these games, you know, 24-20 or whatever it is. So the way that this Falcon defense takes that next step isn't, you know, getting better in the back seven, even though they could use some help there, you know, get some better athletes at linebacker behind the starters and get a couple of more quality corners to help them out. It's really going to take this pass rush to be great, you know, to take this defense from a good defense to a great defense potentially, and sort of mask some of the offensive question marks that we have. And you can't really do that without a pass rush. And I look around and you're right. If it's a fourth round pick, you're not going to, for Michael Bennett, you're not going to beat that value, you know, as opposed to going out there and spending gobs of money on Sheldon Richardson or using a first round pick on a player that, in all likelihood, is probably not going to be as quickly an impact player as Bennett will be. So, like, I think when you look at it from the big picture, even if you're not a huge fan of Michael Bennett, I do think you have to at least say, like, I don't like this player or I don't like this trade necessarily, but I get why the Falcons are going to do it, and I support their efforts to try to do this thing that they need to do if they really want to make this push come 2018. So I think that, you know, to those people that are not necessarily fans of this trade, I think when you think about it in that light, it makes total sense from the Falcons' perspective. And I'm like you, I like Michael Bennett a lot as a player, despite whatever his issues are. I don't quite buy into the locker room stuff that other people are touting and whatnot. And then on top of that, when you sort of see where this could potentially help this team make that last push, similar to, you know, all of a sudden the Seahawks had a good defense in 2012. People forget that. But when they got Averill and Bennett in 2013, they all of a sudden became, you know, one of the best defenses of all time, according to many folks. And then you go and you look at what Bennett did in 2014, Dan Quinn's last year there, especially if you watch that Super Bowl, if you ever get the chance to watch that Super Bowl against the Patriots, they couldn't block him the entire game. He was basically disrupting every single pass play out there. And obviously he's not the same player. He's been beat up a little bit the last couple of years. He's older now, but, you know, he's probably at least 60% of that player that he was back in 2014. And that's probably better than, to be honest, any of the current defensive linemen the Falcons currently have. So I do think he's potentially a massive upgrade to what they can possibly do. And I think it could be a big part of, you know, taking this defense to a level where we are in consideration like we saw last year with the Jaguars and Vikings and Eagles as the best defense in the NFL. So,
yeah. I mean, look, I think Bennett could really take this team, this defense over the edge. And as much as we malign this team and some people malign the defense, the offense was the problem in the playoffs. The defense was playing lights out football every game. I mean, they shut down the Rams, which most people thought that was the best offense in the NFL. That was an incredible performance. They shut down the Eagles, who went on to shred the Vikings defense, who a lot of people thought the Vikings defense was the best in the league. They shredded the Vikings defense. That same team that the Falcons held to, I can't remember, 15 points. So I just feel like Michael Bennett could be the missing piece here to really take that defense over the edge. I mean, you've got your secondary basically locked down. I mean, maybe you could find an upgrade over Brian Poole, maybe, but if your nickel corner is like your weakest point in the secondary, you're doing pretty well. And I think Tack looked like a monster, and I think that he will continue to grow. Hopefully Vic Beasley will have a rebound year. And, you know, Grady Jarrett is Grady Jarrett. I mean, if there's one person on the team that might be better than Michael Bennett right now, it's probably Grady mm-hmm. Jarrett. Your linebackers are solid. I mean, maybe like you said, more depth there. But I think this defense really has the makings of being a potential top five unit. I think Michael Bennett would really let them unlock that potential. I mean, they were so good last year. You know, towards the closing stretch. And that's maybe one of the good things about these Dan Quinn teams is that the defense in particular seems to be playing its best football towards the end of the season. And as they get into the playoffs, I mean, we saw that last year in 2016 as well. So I love it. I love the fit. He obviously knows the defense, Michael Bennett. I hope they can make it happen. I think that the Seahawks want to move on from him. I'm not exactly sure why. You know, maybe they're fully committing to the rebuild. Maybe they just want a quieter player. I mean, I think we saw Greg Rosenthal report that today, that they were looking for a quieter presence on the defensive line, which I think is kind of silly to say, but whatever. I think that they, if no one else offers them a third, which I think a third is too high, but maybe some team will offer it. If no one else offers them a third, I think that they'll make the trade with the Falcons. And I think in a tie situation where there were multiple teams offering fourths, they'd probably also go with the Falcons just because of the relationship that exists there. So I feel pretty good about the trade actually happening too. I mean, I don't think it's a lock by any means, but I would say we're maybe at about 50-50 odds, which is pretty good for a trade scenario at this point. I don't know how you feel about how likely the trade is at this point.
Yeah, I might go 60-40. Likely to happen, but yeah, I'm about the same place. You know how it is. There has been rumors of Michael Bennett being traded to the Falcons since March of 2015, almost exactly 3 years ago. So we've been through this song and dance before, and so I know not to go too crazy until it actually happens. But it does feel like this one has a lot more legs than those previous ones, as you said, for many of the same reasons. So. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the Falcons wind up giving up. I wouldn't be thrilled if they wound up giving up a third. But again, I do understand why they would do it. Hopefully, if they let some of these guys like Claiborne and Poe walk and maybe get some compensatory picks next year, that will sort of compensate a little bit for potentially if they have to give up a little bit more than that fourth round pick or a later round pick than we would like, but we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Let's get into the combine. And, you were out there. I was reading your tweets over the weekend, getting your thoughts on all the different 40 times and whatnot and seeing who you thought tested well in the drills. But to all of our listeners out there, before we get into some of the guys that you thought played particularly well, when you sat down and were watching the combine coverage, you know, probably in your underwear and you know
me so well.
Your girlfriend's like, are you going to leave the house today? And like, no,
nope,
not going to do it.
yep.
But, when you were doing that, Sort of what did you what were you trying to get out of the combine? What are sort of your thoughts on how it contributes to your own process and maybe in specifically to the Falcons process?
Right. So usually I go into the combine with kind of a short list of guys that I'm mostly interested in. I try to, you know, watch a little bit of film on, you know, once the combine participant list gets released, I'll go over that. And if there's players I think sound interesting, Lance Erline does a great job with those little quick hits that he does for the combine guys. So if I'll go through that, and if there's guys in there that sound interesting, you know, I'll watch a game or two and create kind of a short list of guys that I think could be fits for the Falcons, and then I'll kind of pay attention to them during the combine drills. If you don't go into the combine with some kind of short list, it's easy to get overwhelmed because there's so many people working out. But there's always guys that, you know, catch your eye and that you can scribble their name down to look at later. But, you know, my scouting has probably been the most advanced this year that I've done so far, you know, mostly because I'm coordinating all the Falcoholics draft stuff. But, the athletic testing for me is just, you know, it's a piece. I know a lot of people, put a lot of stock in the athletic testing. And that's fine. I mean, the athletic testing is important, especially for some positions more than others. But that's why I like to kind of watch at least a little bit of film on most of the players that I'm interested in going into the combine. So that way I don't overreact to the testing. But yeah, I go in with my short list. I watch the workouts. I kind of keep an eye on who's overperforming and who's underperforming relative to what I expected, what I saw on tape, and just go from there. You know, I got dragged by FSU Twitter yesterday pretty bad for my Derwin James 40 take. I'm sorry. I thought he would run a 4.4. My bad. But that was probably unreasonable. But, you know, you can't get too, like, can't get too worked up about the testing, because look, if a guy tests way better than he looked on film, then you got to go back and watch and say, okay, was this guy actually a bad athlete, or did he just play slow? And is that, you know, an awareness issue, an IQ, a football IQ issue or something like that? And if you see a guy that plays really fast on tape, but he's a bad athlete, then it's the reverse. You know, maybe he has just advanced processing skills. He's really quick to read and react on plays and that sort of thing. So, it's more like just a piece of the puzzle. You know, athletic testing is a part of how I grade, but it's fun. You know, I like watching the workouts and the drills are fun. The 40 times are obviously fun to try to predict. And then, got your phone stopwatch to do your own hand times, that kind of thing. But, it's both. Just the main thing I would tell people is not to like overreact to the workouts. You know, obviously the mock drafts will be super crazy, taking into account the workouts over like the next 2 weeks, and then by the time we get to May, everything will kind of calm down again. But just go in, use it to confirm what you've seen on tape, and then if it doesn't match the tape, go back and watch it and see what you missed. So
I think with the combine, you know, with the first round guys, typically with probably the major exception of Orlando Brown, it doesn't really affect, you know, it can help your stock, maybe move you up 5-10 spots or something. Like a guy like Josh Jackson, like I thought if he had a really good combine, he could have sort of moved himself up as the consensus number one cornerback. You know, if you particularly if you don't necessarily consider Minkah Fitzpatrick to be a cornerback, which I don't think is the popular perception at this point.
But I don't see him as a corner, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, now after the combine, I'm like, yeah, he's probably more the consensus third, maybe fourth guy, given how well Jair Alexander, who people knew was a good corner. But, you know, you sort of need these things to confirm some things that you see. Like, you're like, hey, he looks good, but how fast is he? How far can he really jump? How strong is he? Those types of things. And you're right, it does matter a little bit more. Position specific, particularly I think with defensive linemen, we've learned over the years, particularly when it comes to pass rushers, that if you don't have certain athletic standards, the chances of you being a high level pass rusher are relatively low. There are some exceptions to the rule, but it generally is a pretty good guideline to pass rush potential. Obviously, just because you're an amazing athlete doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to be this monster pass rusher in the NFL by any means. Bud Dupree is the
the king of that.
Yeah, you know.
I was going to say Desmond Southward, but you were talking about pass rush.
Yeah, yeah. So it is one of those things that you're right. You can't take it too seriously and just base it off of combine testing. But it is a significant piece of the puzzle for certain positions. Obviously, wide receivers. You know, not everybody needs to have 4.4 speed, but if you're not going to have 4.4 speed, you know, like a guy like Justin Hardy or Julian Edelman, you want to see those guys do well in the 3-cone, you know, so they're quicker than fast. And so it's one of those things where it's like, if you have, you know, you run a 4.6 and then you have like a 7.2 3-cone as a wide receiver, you know, that's not necessarily suggesting that you're going to be a high level NFL wide receiver. That's, you know, so those are the things that you sort of look for. It can be a little bit more of an elimination process for some higher level prospects that you thought were really good players, but maybe you're like, maybe he's not as good as we thought he was, like Orlando Brown being the poster child for that. But then it also helps, I think, with some of these later round guys you would say, oh yeah, he's a role player in the NFL. He can make an NFL roster, but he's not necessarily. And then you see, oh wait, he's a 92nd percentile athlete. Maybe he's a little bit better than we thought, and maybe he's, you know, instead of waiting until round 7 to draft him, maybe we can roll the dice on him a little bit in round 4, and really give him a legitimate shot. And so I think that's really where the combine comes into play. It can raise some low level guys in stock, and it can kind of kill some high level guys stock.
Yeah,
the Orlando Brown stuff. You have any specific thoughts on that whole thing?
I feel bad for the kid because, oh man, like he was really getting buzz as like the top tackle, and this is a pretty weak tackle class, but still, I mean, to go from that to, we're hearing reports now that some teams have dropped him to a day 3 grade now. I mean, I don't think he's going to go undrafted or anything, but he didn't do anything well. Like, it would be one thing if he tested like that and then put up like 30 reps on the bench or something. It's like, oh, okay, well, he's just he's a pure power tackle, going to be a road grader, and, you know, his pass protection is probably going to need some work. He's just not going to be a great athlete. 14 reps on the bench, man. Oh my gosh. Like, you got to do something, right? Like, I feel like either I don't know. If I was his agent, I would have told him not to go. I would have told him just not to test. Like, like that would have been better. The question marks about why doesn't he want to test and all this. Like, that would have been better than what he did. And you got to respect him for – he probably knew that he wasn't going to run fast or do these drills great. Or maybe he just didn't train and, like, expected that he would just naturally be fine at it. I don't know. So I appreciate that he did try to go and compete, but – man, that is just rough. I do feel bad for him in a way, but man, yeah, it was never in contention for the Falcons, so it, you know, not something that I was super invested in, but got a feel for the kid.
Yeah, yeah, I was joking with Arif Hassan, who covers the Vikings, and I was like, he made Phil Loadholt look like an amazing athlete, you know? And like, so like, I watched Orlando Brown, and I'm like, yeah, he's not that great of an athlete, but he's so big and physical that he can get the job done, in the same way that Phil Loadholt, who played at Oklahoma many, many years ago and spent a decade in the NFL, was the same way. And it's like, yeah, he's not going to test out the gym, but when you're that big, you don't need to have amazing athleticism to be effective. But he tested so poorly. Like, it was like, you know,
one of the worst ever.
Yeah. It, just to the level, like, and it sort of speaks more to, like, did he do any weight room stuff at all at Oklahoma? Because, like, even if you just, you know, like, you would think that just by a college strength and conditioning program that you would test a little bit better, especially at Oklahoma. You know, maybe if you went to, you know, a Division III school, we might be having a different conversation. But, like, at Oklahoma, if you just did just the basics at that strength program, that you would be able to do a little bit more than some of this stuff. And so...
Yeah.
It raises those questions, and I think that's really where it hurts him. Is like, has he been working out, or has he just been relying solely on his size and his natural God-given abilities, which he has? Otherwise, he wouldn't have been considered a first-round pick to a lot of people. But, like, you're, you know, what, however old he is, 22, 21 or whatever, like at this point, NFL teams typically aren't in the business of teaching a guy how to work hard, you know? Right. So that's really what hurts him more so than anything. And so I'm with you. Like, I feel bad for him, but if it is a situation where the last couple of years at Oklahoma, he's been sort of coasting and not putting in the work in the gym, he kind of made his own bed, and now he has to sort of lie in it. So yeah. I guess it's a lesson to all these college kids out there, or really anybody, really, like, you know, you can't coast but so far on these yeah. sort of things. So
someone tell high school me that.
Yeah. some of the guys specifically, because we know the Falcons are looking at some of these offensive linemen, particularly on the interior, the defensive tackles. With the release of Shelby, it has made me look a little bit further at some of these edges. I knew that they would be in the market for some of these guys, but it didn't necessarily seem like a pressing need to me a couple of weeks ago. But now with Shelby gone, now I'm digging a little bit deeper in some of these guys that can sort of play that Michael Bennett role, you know, as a base defensive end and maybe a nickel pass rusher on the inside for the Falcons moving forward. And maybe some other positions that you were sort of focused in on, and maybe a couple of the names that sort of jumped out to you maybe as some sleeper guys that you're like, oh, this guy really stepped up. You know, James Looney was a guy for me that I never had heard of until went to the combine, and then come to find out that he was at an all-star game and then tested well. I'm like, oh, that's the magic thing for the Falcons. You know, they love their all-star guys and the good testers. So he was a guy that pinged my radar. But maybe it was some guys that you really liked going into the process that sort of confirmed in your eyes, or really just anything, some of the standouts to you.
Yeah. To me, James Daniels was really, really impressive. I know he didn't run the 40 cause he had, I think he was recovering from something. But I think he really solidified himself as a first rounder. You know, I had questions about how much he was going to weigh, you know, and all that. There were reports that he was in the 280s and that sort of thing. He came in 6'4", 306, so that basically checked the box for me, so I'm not concerned about his size. He's never going to be the strongest guard, but the Falcons don't really ask their linemen to do that. So just really, really strong athletic testing. You know, he's just a phenomenal athlete. He's very technically sound. He can play center and guard, so that gives the Falcons the flexibility, you know, in 3 years or so, whenever Max contracts up, they could kick, you know, Daniels in to play center, and they could find another guard. He could also back up center, take over at right guard potentially. He really impressed me, so I think he's definitely inserted himself into the conversation for the Falcons' first-round pick. You know, there were several defensive tackles that did really well. You know, I think Daron Payne had a solid workout. His 40 was really impressive. The rest of his workouts were just average above average, so not anything particularly special. But you know, he definitely didn't disappoint. Taven Bryan tested crazy, so I know Eric Robinson will be excited about that. Taven Bryan's his son, I'm pretty sure. So he was good. There were a lot of guys in there that I liked. Lorenzo Carter from Georgia, if you want kind of a Vic Beasley-esque edge player, he tested like crazy as well. Super long, and you know, he could be interesting, but with that workout, he's probably vaulted himself up to maybe being a little too early for the Falcons to go after. But Shaquem Griffin was the other guy that Shaquem Griffin's like my favorite player, and I didn't expect him to test like that. I mean, 4.38. At his size, that's just ridiculous. 20 bench press reps with one hand, also very impressive to me. The only problem with that is, you know, he probably played himself out of his availability for the Falcons. So at this point, you know, if they want him, they'd probably have to take him on day two. And it just seems like with the rest of the needs they have, that another day two linebacker pick is probably unlikely. But I wouldn't complain about it. A lot of guys were real impressive. Some later round guys too, but I guess those are probably the guys that were that, Traquan Smith too from UCF. I really like him as a potential wide receiver 3 takeover for Gabriel type of guy. I like his upside, and his athletic testing actually really impressed me. So, he's another guy that I thought was impressive.
Yeah. I really sort of was waiting for the combine to help us out with the wide receiver class because it seemed like it was a bunch of – it's not really necessarily a great wide receiver class, maybe particularly at the top, but it does seem like there's a glut of sort of these second, third, fourth round guys. So if you want to get a – you can get a solid wide receiver at some point in that range. And sort of the combine sort of was going to help us differentiate between some of these guys, who's fast, who's maybe a deep threat, who's maybe a possession guy, those sorts of things. So, and Tre'Quan Smith was a guy that sort of was put on my radar a little bit. I liked a lot of the players I've seen on the UCF defense, including Shaquem Griffin, as well as Mike Hughes and Jameis Pittman, among others. Mm-hmm. And so, like, with the offense, I hadn't really paid too much attention to it, and was like, okay, and you go back and watch a little bit more of this UCF offense, because he's one of those guys that has the size. If you want a tall, fast guy to play on that outside, along with Julio and Sanu, and maybe potentially be developed as a Sanu replacement to go alongside Julio, come 2019, 2020, I think Tre'Quan Smith does fit that mold, so... who were some guys for you that didn't necessarily live up to your expectations or surprised you with some of the struggles that they had?
I was pretty disappointed with Hercules Mata'afa's workout. I thought he would be a little bit more athletic. With that testing, you know, it's difficult to project him now. Like, I thought he was athletic enough maybe to be an inside-outside player. I mean, obviously he can't play inside anywhere near a rundown. That's not his game anyway. But if he was athletic enough to play the edge too, then it's like, oh, you could kind of get him as that kind of pass rush specialist type of role. But with that testing, that's going to be difficult. Who else was there that I thought was a little slow? Auden Tate was getting a lot of hype, and I think he had a pretty bad day as far as his workout. I was never a huge fan of him, but I didn't expect him to run that slow. Let's see, who were the other guys? I know Hercules stood out to me, but one guy I expected to be bad that was actually good was Harrison Phillips, which I don't know where that came from, but he actually tested really agile, which I found very bizarre because he looks like stiff, incredibly stiff on tape. So, yeah. Was not sure what happened there, but somehow he managed to make that work. Tim Settle was the other one. He was getting so much hype. He was getting like late first round hype over the last couple weeks. People were saying he was going to test like a freak. I haven't actually watched more than like a game of his, so I knew balance was kind of an issue for him, but you see like flashes where you're like, oh, well, maybe he's explosive and he's got these traits or whatever. Nope. Tanked. Terrible, terrible testing, man. I don't know what happened, but that was just awful. So, those are probably the guys that were the most disappointing. I know some people were hyping up Deshaun Hand. He tested really pretty poorly. They kind of grouped him with the defensive end, so I don't think that's really fair. He's probably more of a tackle, but some disappointments. I, for the most part, people were fine. People kind of tested in the range, but yeah, Tim Settle maybe was the biggest one that I was surprised about. So he was not athletic at all.
Yeah, that was baffling to me with Tim Settle. I was one of those people who were like, yeah, if he tests really well, he could be possibly, you know, in the mix in the late first round, maybe even as a Falcons pick. If he tests, you know, really well and sort of hits some of the baseline measurables that they tend to look for in their defensive linemen and pass rushers. But he didn't come anywhere close to that. And he tested basically like Joey Embu did. And Joey Embu was like fifth percentile in a lot of the things that he tested in. And and Settle was basically that. And we know Joey Embu was a undrafted player. He's still in the league. So it's not as if like, you know, that precludes Tim Settle for going on to having a successful NFL career. But instead of being like a surefire top 50 pick, you know, he may have fallen to possibly be like a day three pick. And maybe only teams that are running these 3-4 systems that don't necessarily need a powerful pusher type D tackle in the middle, like you would assume the Falcons might be looking for to replace Poe. Or is probably looking at Tim Settle as opposed to a 4-3 team like the Falcons who want guys that can move a little bit more. So, you know, at this point, I would assume that he's probably going to be off the Falcons draft board altogether unless he comes out in his pro day and shows that, you know, his testing at the combine was, you know, just him having a bad day and he's really not that unathletic. So
his balance is so poor though. Like, yeah, he was tripping all over the bags and all that. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it's going to be tough for him. He really did not have a good performance.
You're absolutely right. That was the one thing I saw in film that was concerning to me and it made me a little bit skeptical of him as this high end player. And then, you know, it's one thing to run a slow 40 and not be able to jump and whatnot again, because you have another opportunity to do that at your pro day and improve on those numbers and get those numbers a little bit up. But to go through the drills and just be as sloppy and unbalanced as he is, it makes it seem like, yeah, that's just who he is in terms of his lack of balance and whatnot. And so that's not something that you can necessarily fix, or at least will take a lot more effort than typically NFL teams want to put in to try to fix. So we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
So, Kevin, what is next for you now that the combine is over, that you can go out and see the sun? you know, free agency is almost upon us.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually going to be taking a week off next week going skiing because it's spring break. So I'm going to be doing that. So I'm going to leave most of the free agency takes to the other Falcoholic people. But, you know, I'll be doing scouting reports probably 2 to 3 a week. I'm doing Hayden Hurst tomorrow, which would be Wednesday, for those of you that listen to this podcast in some other time warp where tomorrow doesn't mean anything. And then I'm going to do James Daniels this week too. So those will be two that the Falcons actually met with. Otherwise, mock draft every week, random takes. Like, I'll probably do something about the Michael Bennett trade and why people need to get over it, because it's going to happen. I'm just going to believe that it's going to happen and that's going to help me sleep at night. But just basically covering the draft stuff. We're still doing the Falcoholic Live in the off season. So we actually have a show Thursday. So we'll be talking about the combine and probably some of the similar stuff we spoke about, honestly, the combine and these rumors and kind of the cuts and that sort of thing. We're doing that every other week during the off season. And then we'll definitely be doing our draft party again on day one of the draft, where we do a live stream throughout the whole first round. So that should be a lot of fun. But yeah, otherwise just, you know, the same old grind. Hopefully I'll not tweet out anything else as embarrassing as what I tweeted yesterday and won't get dragged again anytime soon. But we'll hope for the best on that one.
Well, you got to stay away from FSU Twitter. They are notorious.
I did not understand. So that now I know. So I know not to mess with them anymore. So
where can people find your Twitter?
I am at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter. So appreciate anyone that checks that out. There'll be draft takes and other takes. Sometimes political takes, if you can handle the heat on that. But for the most part, it's pretty tame.
Okay. I'm hoping maybe I will get an invite to the draft party this year, unlike last year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's I'll have to clear it, you know, with Dave and everybody else. Uh-huh. Yeah. We'll see what we can do for you.
All right, man.
That would be fun. We're going to try. We're definitely going to try to get some community people in there, too. So
yeah, I know you got like 4 hours of content you can fill. I can come in and do 15 minutes, you know.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll definitely keep you in mind. If you're interested, well, I think we can probably work you in at least for some part. Maybe, you know, like after, you know, when somebody, you know, for some really boring pick or something, you know, we'll get you in there.
Okay. Why do I feel like I just asked a girl out and she said, yeah, I kind of already have a boyfriend, you know?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. No, okay. We'll get you on there, man. I appreciate you getting me. I think this was the first podcast I ever did, so I got to pay you back at some point.
All right, I appreciate that. All right, pay it forward. All right, Kevin, I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me for the better part of an hour talking draft and Falcons. And we'll do it again as we get closer to the draft and things start to coalesce with the Falcons in terms of specific players that we can sort of get excited about and then watch as the Falcons don't draft those guys.
Of course.
Yeah. So, all right, man, we'll keep in touch with you and we'll certainly be chatting soon again.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You have a good night.
You too.
All right, guys. That's it. Let's try to get out of here in under an hour. You guys know where to find me. I'm on Twitter @FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. if it is podcast related, and you could just go ahead and send that over to the show's Twitter handle at Locked On Falcons. Locked On Falcons, of course, is the name of the Facebook page if you prefer that social media platform. You can also do email. LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address. Of course, you can find this podcast at LockedOnFalcons.com, where the show is posted daily, as well as on FalcFans.com. And you can leave a comment there as well to get in touch with myself. I know I've been promising mailbags and whatnot for the last several weeks. And as regular listeners of the show know, when I promise I'm going to write something, you have to assume that it's going to take at least 6 weeks for me to write that thing. This is why I am self-published, I guess, because I don't have to do deadlines. And that's how my process works. But I certainly will try to get the answers to many of those questions that you guys asked in early February. That's up at some point, but I will no longer promise doing it. I thought I would do it while I was sitting there on my couch watching the combine, but I didn't. So if I couldn't do it last weekend, then I don't know what weekend I will do it. So we'll see how that goes. But definitely check out LockedOnFalcons.com for additional content in addition to this podcast. As we just posted a, what was the most recent thing? I guess we did a 7-round mock. I guess I will do a 7-round mock for the Falcons post combine probably next week before the start of free agency, just to get something else out there. You can also check out my first 2-round mock with trades over at FalcFans.com. That was another recent piece of content I put up. And yeah. There you go, guys. Enjoy yourselves. We will be back hopefully on Friday with more combine recaps from someone outside the Falcons organization. It would seem like scheduled. So we'll get some more general draft takes in terms of their outlook on the combine, not necessarily how it affects the Falcons. But we'll get some good, interesting storylines from that, and we'll see what's that. So stay tuned to that. We'll be back later this week with more combine recap, and we'll see maybe if the Falcons make a big, bold move for trading for Pro Bowl defensive lineman in between now and then. And if so, we'll certainly be talking about that in the coming days and weeks. So you guys stay locked on, and I will be seeing you.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.